Honorable members, we have a briefing today by the South African Revenue Services on tax statistics for 2011. We will not take too much time in terms of trying to understand what this is all about until such time that the Commission is team take us through the presentation. And yes, we'll do the usual thing after their presentation. But let me take this opportunity, Commissioner, to welcome you. It's always a pleasure to see you here. And more especially if our tax issues have been addressed, we always remain hopeful that you'll address our challenges in Parliament. So we must be very close to you and nice to you as members of Parliament. Over to you, Commissioner. You'll introduce your team. You know honorable members. You have been here several times. Of course, those who are seeing us for the first time, as we engage, you'll then tend to know who we are. Through an interaction. Over to you, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members. It's an honor, as usual, again, to be with you to present to you an overview of the most recent tax statistics publications, which were released, if you remember, during the budget day in February this year by the Minister. I hope you all have the packs with you. This presentation, Honourable Members, would cover the following topics. Slide one over there. It will be the revenue and economic crisis, growth in compliance, revenue trends per tax type, and then I will finally conclude on our interpretation of what the tax statistics are saying. Honourable Chairs, this publication is a joint collaboration between ourselves and the National Treasury, and it is aimed at providing information in line of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, the PAJA Act, to a wide variety of stakeholders involved in the development and implementation of tax and tax fiscal policy and economic policy. This is the fourth edition, Chair, if you remember, and it contains information as of the end of last year, the financial year last year, 31 March 2011, and it also would touch on a range of tax and customs data sourced from our core SAR systems. And those core SAR systems is a tax register, tax returns and assessment of individuals and companies, declaration and assessment, payment and refunds, and bills of entry on the customs side. Taking over a period of time, this information, Honourable Members, provides a useful insight, we believe, into taxation and the South African economy, including such areas as the sources and trends of revenue over the past few years. We'll cover that, the demographics of taxpayers, how many people from counting and so on, and gender issues or gender profiles of our tax base, the sources of income and deductions of taxpayers based on their annual return submission. And we'll also cover the contributions to VAT and CIT according to economic and industrial sector, to name but a few. Since the first release in 2008, Chair, it has been increasingly widely used, this booklet, by members of parliament, academics, who some of them I see around in the meeting today, the media and other commentators, to help inform and guide debate about tax policy and how best to meet the needs of our country. So it has now grown into a very important piece of publication. This latest one is more than 150 pages, as you can see, and contains thousands of data points. Statistics can be used, and indeed statistics can be abused to support a variety of arguments and counter-arguments. Honorable members, I'm sure you will all you are all familiar with the famous Mark Twain's quotation. And the quotation says that there are three kinds of lies. You know, it's lies, damned lies, and statistics. So we should bear in mind as you go through this thing that statistics are the third levels of lies. Or can be used as the third level of a lie. That the true power of statistics is not in any individual data point, but rather through the trends and shifts they reveal when used over a period of time and when interpreted within a particular context. Honorable members, there is neither time nor great value, I think, in presenting this publication to you page by page, or slide by slide, or statistics by statistics. As you can see, the majority of the 150 pages are tables, and we're not going to go through each and every one of those particular tables. Rather, my intention today is to give you a brief overview of the story which the statistics, we think, is telling. It is a story, honorable members, of how South Africa has been able to weather with remarkable resilience, the economic storm which continues to buffet us, our key trading partners, and the entire globe. This publication, honorable members, tells how we have been able to do this through our government, through government's adoption and careful implementation of a prudent fiscal policy supported by a very strong culture of compliance. This is the story that we are descending out of this publication. Firstly, though, as the chair has hinted to it, allow me to introduce the team which has accompanied me here today to help field your questions and explain the statistics far more fully. As you can see, we really pulled the academic and the big guns from SAFS and the National Treasury. I'm joined by Doctor. And these are real doctors, not multi-doctors. I'm joined by Dr. Randall Carlson, who is our group executive of revenue analysis, and who, along with Treasury officials, is responsible for the compilation of the test statistics publication each year. So we will answer the tough questions, because he's responsible for this thing. I'm just the blunt part here. Also with us is our group executive for Large Business Center, because half of the statistics are about our business, our corporate taxes are performing. Her name is Ms. Rita Mike, she's here. Honorable member reminded us that, we are less than 50% the other sex. We are trying, Comrade Chair. Our chief economist is another doctor, Tanuma Dimani, who's sitting at the corner there. We do also have an economist. They're not only the treasurer. Along with Dion Rettenbach, an executive from the revenue analysis, and Mr. Raymond Sitole, a senior economist next to me here from the National Treasury. He said, I must tell the committee that he's from analysis and revenue in the Treasury, not policy. So if you ask him difficult policy questions, you'll have to defer to his other colleagues. Correlates strongly with shifts in GDP and economic activity, and South Africa has not been immune to the 2008 economic downturn. From 2000 to 2008, SARS maintained a compound annual growth rate in tax collections of 13.2%, as you can see over there in the slide. This halved to about 5.9% during and post the financial crisis starting in 2008. That will be on slide 6. the concurrent reduction of tax to GDP ratio from about a high of 27% percentage of GDP at its peak in 2008 to just about 24% as a percentage of GDP in the past financial year. Currently has met our government and has helped to raise its growth loan debt to GDP ratio from 27.8% to 40.1%. So because of the drop in tax as a percentage of GDP from 27 to the present 24%, the government had to raise its gross loan debt as a percentage of GDP from 27.8% to 40.1%. During this period, they did that to maintain the counter-cyclical stance assumed as part of the overall fiscal strategy. Honourable members, you will see that the tax statistics shows that the impact of the global recession on the South African fiscal amounted, and this is a big number, amounted to an estimated 255 billion of reduced tax revenue. If we didn't have the recession, we would have collected, we believe, an extra 255 billion. So this is the extent of the impact of the recession. And this is borne out on the tax statistics, as you can see over there in the graph. You will remember that in 2008, we had a drop, 2008-2009, a 75 billion drop in revenue. In tax revenue. So if you have to rebalance that for every year, we'll take care of that 255 billion. So it's a huge amount. As you remember, last year we collected 742 billion. So if you could have added that, it's a huge percentage of what potentially the revenue that we have had. But the fiscal space which our policies has provided allowed us to increase borrowings without having to resort to raising taxes and punishing austerity measures, as is the case in many other countries like Brazil, Euro zone and elsewhere. In many of the developed countries, the tax collections contracted sharply in 2008, with the worst downturn seen in those countries that were the most exposed to the subprime crisis exported from the USA. This first set of countries that collapsed were Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain as they adapt the PIGS countries. Revenue collection in Spain and Ireland, for example, contracted by as much as 17% and 14% respectively in 2008. At that stage, and in general terms, developing countries still enjoyed reasonable growth in tax revenue. In 2009, honorable members, the G7 economies joined the fray with the US, UK, Germany, where they started to register contractions in revenue of also around 17%, 7% and 6% respectively for US, UK and Germany. Developing countries, with exception in China and India, were then experiencing moderating growth in rates. In 2010, most countries arrested the free flow, and in some cases, modest recoveries were seen. In 2010, the U.S. and Germany grew by 2.7% and 1.3% respectively. Growth in the European in Europe remained flat, except for the U.K., which resorted to raising taxes. During this period, honorable members, of global upheaval, South African tax collection remained comparatively resilient. The tax statistics that we are presenting today will show that in 2008-2009, while the economies of most of its trading partners showed contraction, the South African revenue collection continued to grow at 9.1%. If you compare that with those growths that we have just been talking about, you can see that it's a significant amount. This was mostly due to the support provided by the lag effect of corporate income tax. In 2009-10, the combined effect of flat consumption and trade taxes and the reduced company profits that came through in the tax collection led to a contraction of 4.2%, if you remember. And that was the 75 billion that I was alluding to earlier. Tax revenue rebounded strongly by 12.6% in the previous year, 2010-11, and all taxes, with the exceptions of CIT, corporate income tax, have now recovered to pre-crisis levels. For the 2011-2012 tax year, the unaudited revenue shows growth of 10.2%. So we had the 12.6% last year. By the end of this year, March, we had shown a growth year on year of 10.2%. The tax revenue for the current year, 2012-2013, which was announced by the minister in his budget in February, is expected to grow by around 11.3%. So you can see, honorable members, that we are growing at least with double digits and above inflation. So in real terms, you know, tax revenues are growing. Honorable, when we appeared before you 2 weeks ago to present our annual strategic plan, you would recall that the deputy minister made the point that among the very visible signs of significant compliance gains since 1994 were significant increases in the number of taxpayers contributing to our nation's well-being. These gains are borne out in numbers of registered taxpayers reflected in this publication on page 2, slide number 12, but this publication only tells the story, honorable members, for the past 5 years. We believe the true story of growth in contribution is reflected in the figures since the birth of our democracy 18 years ago. And these are the numbers of how tax has performed or compliance has performed in the last 18 years. The growth in individual tax register in the last 18 years from 1.7 million, the tax register was in 1994, to 6 million in 2010. The register has since doubled again following a policy change in 2011 to register all individuals that are employed in formal employment, those below the threshold and those that are even in, far below the threshold. So we doubled. We have now about 12 million people on the tax register. Over the same period from 1994, the number of companies registered for income tax increased from 422,000 in 1994 to more than 2 million in 2011-2012. Registered VAT vendors increased from 397,000 in 1994 to 664,000 at present. And the number of registered employers, Chair, grew from 177,000 in 1994 to 385,000 to date. So all in all, you can see that the trajectory has been really positively looking since the advent of democracy. It is worth re-emphasizing what our minister and deputy minister have been at pains, honorable members, to point out on numerous occasions that almost every single South African makes a contribution to the fiscus. And this is very important. Be it through income tax on earnings, or capital gains, or tax on interest, value-added tax. For example, when a child buys a sweet, he pays VAT. When we fill our tanks with fuel, we pay a fuel levy. Or the many other instruments designed to ensure we all share the responsibility of our country's future. So always when we talk about tax contribution, we talk about personal income tax, and there are many other indirect taxes that our people contribute to across the whole of South Africa. It is this shared responsibility, we believe, Chair, that has contributed to our fiscal strength and stability growing for each year, as reflected by the revenue increases from 114 billion in 1994-1995 tax year to over 742.7 billion in the most recent financial year, as I alluded to. The growth in compliance is also reflected in the increase in submissions of individual income tax returns to on time to SARS. On page 26 of the tax statistics, you will see that on-time filing increased from 58% in 2008-09 year to 80.7% during the 2010-2011 tax season. That's a major improvement that is indicative of the level of compliance, at least when it comes to on-time registration. Honourable members, this improvement is directly attributed to the impact of the modernization program, which has made it even much more easier for people to submit their return. And this has vastly improved the turnaround times for assessments and payment of refunds, and has allowed more accurate enforcement of return submission by individuals, including through administrative penalties, which is a facility which this committee, we are very thankful for. Since we have introduced the administrative penalty regime, we have seen those levels of on-time compliance rising up to 80.7%. And we have raised, as I said in the last appearance to the committee, we have raised over R1 billion on administrative fees. I'm sure that you will have noticed that similar compliance is not yet reflected in the statistics that are in the book regarding corporate income tax. And this is really worrying, Chair, if I have to point it out. On page 79 of the tax statistics, we reveal that the percentage of assessments completed for companies liable to submit returns is less than very satisfactory, Chair. At this present moment, we are sitting at 54.6% of companies that are required to submit their return only submitting it for 2007, and 44.5% for 2008, and you can see that the trend is getting poorer. For 2009, only 37.5% of companies that are supposed to submit returns submitted their returns, and for 2010, a disappointing 28%, Chair. But we must also remember, among these companies, Chair, there are those that are dormant, there are those that are not trading, and so on. But even if you disaggregate those, the percentages are still very poor. Remember, I just pointed out that at individual level, the level of compliance are sitting at 80.7%. So you can deduce that at least when in terms of filing, individuals in this country of ours are far more compliant than companies. But you still have to, of course, bear in mind that the majority of them could be dormant and non-trading. Oh, because they're busy in Parliament, not trading, yeah. part of this is due to the 12 months that we allow companies to submit their returns after their financial year end. And why it should be remembered that a company can choose any month of its year end. So, for example, a January company submitting a 2010 return is allowed to submit it only in January in the next year, 2011. Similarly, a December company will be allowed to submit its return in December the next year. And however, a greater part is due to the inadequacy of the registration information we have for companies, many of which are listed as active, but in reality, as I mentioned, are either dormant or non-existent. And we are, and that is why, Chair, we've always said one of our strategies is to have a whole of government approach, where we are trying to clean up with all the resources that we have, the database of CIPIC, you know, the Company and Intellectual Property Commission. So we are working very closely with them so that we have direct access to who are the beneficiaries in the company, how are they structured, because all companies are supposed to abide by the Companies Act, which requires them to file registration with CIPIC, not necessarily with us. So we are working on this as a matter of urgency and priority to make sure that we clean up the source databases from SWPIC. We are currently busy with the modernization of CIT. As you know, we have modernized VAT, PIT, customs. Now this year we have prioritized CIT, which includes the cleanup of the register and working with other government departments, as I mentioned, in this regard to ensure companies which are registered are also registered for tax. The impact of modernization is best felt in the VAT register, which is reflected on page 116 of the tax statistics and slide 15 over there. Here you will note that registrations have actually declined by approximately 80,000 between 2008 and 2011. This is part of the ongoing cleanup of the register, Chair, which SARS has been conducting as part of our focus on bogus VAT registration and attempts to defraud the fiscal via illegitimate VAT claims. So the incidences of VAT fraud in this country are actually shocking. I must be honest. The other day I discovered the VAT fraud of 60 million rand, which had collaboration with some of our people internally, and we are putting mechanisms to protect the fiscus from this illegitimate raiding of the fiscus. But I must say, it's the easiest fraud to commit, and it's very tempting. And we're just worried about, the level of incidences of this fraud. Honorable members, the test statistics also provide insight into the changing dynamics of the three largest contributors to revenue annually. And those three, as you know, are personal income tax, company income tax, and value added tax, which together account for 80% of all tax collected, as you can see in slide number 17. The 15% other taxes, which is like fuel levy, customs, and other small tax types. Allow me to highlight quickly some of the trends in these taxes, which are reflected in the statistics, because they are presented just as tables. I think if you can indulge me, just give us our interpretation of the statistics. Starting with personal income tax, PIT. In 2011-12, Chair, the biggest portion, 98.1% of PIT, was collected through PAYSUN system. And it is this case tracking compliance, which is relatively easy, as the employer is responsible for providing tax information. The remaining PIT is collected through the provisional tax system, and this category will account for investment, rental, and trust income, more complicated income people. It is in this area where there remains a greater potential for tax avoidance and evasion. Generally, the statistics show little impact on salary income as a result of the global recession. While job losses most certainly occurred during this period, our figures suggest that most of these losses occurred in the lower income groups, most of whom were below the tax threshold. PIT slowed from a growth of 15.6% in 2008-09 to 5.1% in 2009-10, but then it bounced back to grow at around 10.6% and 10.3% in the two subsequent fiscal years, as you can see in slide 18 over there. What is shown by the statistics, honorable members, is the increased earnings and upward mobility of South African workers. The statistics show that in 2007, only around 5.5% of assessed taxpayers had taxable income above 400,000. Only 5.5%. But that has grown to around 8.8% by 2010. This text also, honorable members, tells the story of a growing gender equality in the workplace. The women the number of female taxpayers assessed, honorable Dubazan, grew by 163,000 or 9.5% between 2007 and 2010, compared to a movement of only 44,000 or 1.5% in males. Well, yes, there's a graph that is coming to show that. The progressiveness of the rate structure ensured that, for example, in 2010 tax year, 43.3% of assessed taxpayers, all having taxable income of less than 120,000, only had to contribute 3.9% of assessed tax. And this statistic, in some instances, is abused by people to say that lower people are not paying tax. How can they pay tax if you don't earn enough? Because we have a progressive tax system. The more you earn, the more you pay. You know, that's how the tax system works all over the world. So you expect people who are earning less to contribute less compared relatively to those that are earning more. Only having taxable income of less than 100,000 only have to contribute 3.9%, the biggest burden being placed on taxpayers with taxable income in excess of 400,000, who only constitute 8.8% of taxpayers. Okay, and this includes honorable members in this house. So you form only 8.8% of the South African personal income tax taxpayers. But ended up being liable, Chair, for 54.2% of the assessed tax. This is the assessed tax. Remember, there are still 2 million people who are not assessed, but who are below the threshold. And we must remember that, who are paying tax. It's not all the tax. It means just for the assessed people who are required to submit tax returns, 8.8% of taxpayers are liable for 54.2%. But in terms of tax contribution, there's still about 2 million people that earn below 60,000 who pay tax but are not required to submit returns for assessment. It's a very important point, so that you don't abuse this data point. The effective tax rate on individuals declined significantly by 0.9% from 21.6% to 20.7% in the 2010 tax year as a result of the tax relief combined with lower growth in remuneration and employment than expected, which resulted in PIT collections in 2009-10 only growing by around 5.1%, and that is in the next slide, as you can see there. So let me speak a little bit about the relief that you know, the fiscus has given to PIT, to personal income tax payers. The statistics will also tell the story of real tax relief for South Africa's taxpayers over the past few years. Of the 95 billion in tax relief for individuals granted over the past decade, the vast majority has benefited, are the lower and middle income earners, providing both the inflationary relief known as fiscal drag and real relief. On page 25 and 26 of the tax statistics, you'll find a breakdown of tax relief granted to individuals since 1994, which shows that an individual with a taxable income of 100,000 in 1994-1995 was paying an effective tax rate of 33.8%. This would have increased to 39.5% in 2010-2011 if their income had not kept pace with inflation and if they had had no real relief granted. But the effect of the tax relief providers has reduced the effective tax rate to just 18.2%. I think if you put it in this way, people start to understand the effect of the tax relief. Every year when the minister announces his budget, honorable members, you know, the first thing that he talks about under the taxes, the PIT, is the tax relief that we give to compensate for fiscal drag. So for that bracket, those most people, if there was no tax relief, they were going to pay 39, they would be paying effectively 39.5% of their income. Now, with the tax relief and real relief that they have had above inflation, they are only paying 18.2%. Statistics. Honorable members, corporate income tax suffered the most dramatic decline in its contribution to the fiscus. During the global financial crisis, it declined from 165.4 billion in 2008-2009 to 135 billion in 2009-10, and although some recovery has happened, when last year we've seen 152 billion contribution CIT, CIT collections, as you can see, from 165 to 152, has not yet reached pre-crisis levels. In 2008, CIT contributed 165, last year 152. So we still have companies that have not recovered from the financial crisis. The statistics also show, Chair, that South Africa continues to have a very concentrated corporate sector, with less than 1% of companies, Chair, less than 1% of companies paying just over 60% of corporate taxes. You know, through the African Tax Administration Forum, if you look at the distribution of corporate income on the continent, it's the opposite of this. We have very small micro-businesses contributing the majority to tax, to fiscus on the continent. With us, less than 1%, not even 1%, contribute over 60% of corporate taxes. Moreover, Chair, of the 580,000 that were assessed in 2009 tax year, 202,000 were in an assessed loss, whilst the 708 had zero taxable income. So you can see out of the base of 580,000, we have almost half of them being in assessed losses. So this is an indication of the aftermath of the recession. It has had devastating effect. We showed you the figure of 255 billion, of which 175 billion is corporate income tax that has gone to the dogs. And you can see the performance of our corporate, according to this test statistics, is extremely worrying. The statistics also show the very positive impact to the fiscus of the introduction of the 80% rule, which was implemented for companies with year ends after 1 March 2009, which required, as you know, corporates with taxable income in excess of R1 million must settle at least 80% of their tax liability by the time they make their second provisional payment or incur significant penalties. Since we introduced this rule, as you can see, on page 78 of the tax table, shows that a third or top-up provisional payments declined by 52% in 2009-2010 tax year. And they declined further, the third payment top-up for provisional tax. They declined further to 46% in 2010-2011, where an average of 93% of all CIT provisional tax is now paid by the time the second provisional payment is made, compared to 75% in 2007-2008. What it means is we are getting the money in for the fiscus much more earlier after the introduction of the 80% rule. It has had some very positive feedback. So with all these things that we are trying to do, to make sure that we get the money in the fiscus on time, the concentration of the corporate South African corporate sector is still very worrying. Let me move to value-added tax, Chair, if you allow me. VAT collections were reduced during 2009-10 as a result of the recession, but they bounced back, as I said earlier, in 2010-11, achieving the highest growth since the introduction of VAT. This was achieved against the backdrop of stricter registration requirements as well as an extensive cleanup, as I said earlier, of the register that was implemented in October 2008 to limit the extent of fraudulent claims lodged, as mentioned earlier. Despite the reduction in active vendors, net VAT collections improved from 154.3 billion in 2008 to 191 billion in 2011-12. Remember, the cleanup resulted in us dropping 80,000 VAT vendors, which we thought, did not mean. So even with the reduction, the VAT contribution has grown. That is the first tax that signals changes in the economy. And for this reason, the monitoring of the subcomponent of VAT is very important. During the recession, as consumption and investment slumped, import VAT declined significantly from 92 billion in 2008-09 to 70.3 billion in 2009-10. VAT refunds also reduced during this period from 124.8 billion to 117.4 billion. The continuous monitoring of these movements allowed the minister to warn markets on the impact of the recession on tax revenue already in June, if you remember, 2009, well before the MTVPS estimate was announced in October of the same year. The enhancement of the VAT risk engine further contributed to reduce, honorable members, claimed refunds by more than 11 billion last year. In conclusion, Chair, it is said that the definition of statistics is the science of producing unreliable facts from reliable figures. The tax statistics publication is a young publication, Chair. It is only in its fourth year, as you have said. Each year we add to it and expand it to provide an ever more useful and reliable database of figures relating to taxation, a topic that affects and interests all of us. The inclusion of analysis of the top 2,500 companies across various tax types are being considered for inclusion in future publications. Sector-specific publications for sectors such as mining and banking, as well as statistics pertaining to property transactions, to particularly reflect what's happening in the property space. Mineral and petroleum resources, royalties, and employment statistics as derived from submitted IRP5 reconciliations and trade and excise statistics publications. So we hope to come up with individual in-depth publications per sector. I think the one that will interest you, as I mentioned here, when we presented our 5-year strategy, would be the construction sector. We do so to expand the dialogue on taxation, Chair, with a view to reaching an ever-widening consensus around how best to build this nation we share and how best to share the responsibility of this building program. I hope this publication, honorable members, will be used not to substantiate unreliable facts, but to contribute to more meaningful dialogue. I thank you and avail ourselves for further questions, Chair. Thank you very much for your indulgence. Commissioner, thank you very much. This was a very comprehensive presentation of the actual document that we have, the summary, but very comprehensive. It is quite interesting that out of this comprehensive presentation, you can actually extrapolate the performance of our own domestic economy vis-à-vis the impact of a global economy, but also employment statistics, even if it's not coming out that much or vividly, but we can see the impact on employment and which categories of the workforce has been affected most through recessionary challenges. The low-income groups,
and also with such of societies actually been lifted at the same time in terms of remuneration packages and the gaps that have been closed. Quite interesting. But honorable members, you have the floor. Honorable Gordon Wolf, you'll be followed by Honorable Chabalala and Tetwa, and then I'll come back to Honorable Ross, Honorable Tim Harris. You're too far today. I'm saying you're too far. Yeah. Oh, okay, no, it's fine where he is. Okay, in that order. Oh, I see. So that the young ones are closer to the door. We can send them to fetch water and come back. All right, okay. In that order, Honorable Gordon Wolf.
Chairperson, thank you very much. It's more than a comment than a question. I think SARS is the good child of Treasury. You know, it's like being a good Christian. You're going to church. You know, you don't do anything wrong. You're just there. When they ask you to do the job, you do the job. But nobody prays you for that. Even if when you become a bad child and you repent in front of the congregation, everybody says hallelujah and praise you. But you know, let me just say, I think in the debate, you know, SARS was not mentioned what they deserve. And because you know, there's nothing to debate about SARS. So let me put it on the record on behalf of my party that I think SARS is doing a very good job, and we can be very proud of that section of the Treasury. Then just a comment on what you've told us we could have had, the 255 billion more if there was not a recession. If you add corruption to that, we've lost probably half a trillion rand in South Africa that we could have had more. So just imagine that. And then finally, you've said your statistics are saying that the loyal taxpayers are pay as you earn, the PIT sector. Do you think you're doing enough for them? You know, they're the loyal guys. They've got no excuses. They just simply pay. But those are also those who queue at your centres. And they don't get any Christmas cards from SARS. They just pay loyally their taxes because there's no option. So do you think you're doing enough to make it easier for them and that they do not feel in the end that they've been ripped off? When they listen at cocktail tables to some of the company directors and they tell them what they're doing and what companies are doing and how less they've paid in taxes this year, you know, then you feel sure, you know, you are being in the bad spot of tax-paying category.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. I think it's clarity more than anything else around issues of, it's been mentioned on page 9 that the collections were reduced in 2019 because of recession, but it picked up since the introduction of it. And I hear that we're speaking about the exemption, especially on the low-income groups around it, that there is part of exemption around that. But you know, I cannot seem to also worry from where I'm sitting to say that I would also wonder how much does this VAT, as much as this exemption, that how does it affect the low income groups? For instance, you would have a domestic worker that gets paid 1,000 rand. From there, there's nothing that they will pay, of course, to SARS because they don't earn much. They get into a taxi, they must pay for taxi. They get to ShopRite, they must buy a plastic bag, there's VAT on it, they must buy food, there's tax on it. So I feel that, you know, I would just want to get clarity from where you're sitting, that do you feel that, beside politics and citizens, that are we doing much around those low-income groups? From where we're sitting, is there justice around that? Because I would think that their standard of living gets affected as much as might speak about the more you earn, the more you pay, but they also get affected around the regulations that we also do. So I feel that their living standards, as I'm saying, that they get to buy food-based money, so that money becomes nothing to them. So I feel that at a particular point is that, you know, are we really considering and how much impact does really this has on them? Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is just to check on page 5. There is that growth of registration for individuals and companies. I just want to know from SARS that is there a possibility just to indicate, particularly on the company side, where are these companies? Because it is said, mentioned on the next page that some of them you may think that they are existing, but they are dormant. But was it not because of the 2010 World Cup, so where most companies were coming up, registering for the small business? Is it possible just to get that data where it can explain as to see as to where is this growth that is coming from? Is there any data that is of that nature so that it can be used to other even department as well? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I'm making an assumption, but we had a presentation from a very well-known political analyst on Monday, and he said there's two sectors in South Africa that's currently disempowered. Now, the one he said, and I don't want to go into political debate, he says it's the unions, it's the labor forces. But the other one that might be relevant to today's discussion, he said, is big business. And my question is in regard to big business and perhaps the disempowerment experienced by a company like Anglo, who shifted their base from South Africa to Britain. And the analyst asked, where on earth could you find any other government that would allow that, you know, in terms of tax revenue losses? And I would like to know, in terms of these huge business, you know, what exactly was the cost of a company like Anglo? And perhaps if there's other examples, Mutual was mentioned by Honorable Kornoff. And it's all about perhaps confidence in the country and in terms of our income, what impact would that have? Chair, that would be the one question. The other one is regarding the cost of doing business in South Africa, which is an important category that I think in terms of tax we should also explore. If you look at the entrepreneurs and the SME sector, where we, during 2002, there were losses on their books. And 1,000 and 8,000 zero taxable income. Is that an indication that it's increasingly becoming more problematic of doing business in South Africa? Because these are the sectors that should give us the stimulus to job creation. And I would like to know from a tax perspective are we encouraging job creation through the tax incentives or not?
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Harris. Chair, I before this committee, you know, I served on trade and industry, and we had endless headaches with the CIPC, which the commissioner referred to. And then the members will remember last week we debated the Stats SA budget votes, and there's been a major concern from, or rather, major non-fulfillment of the commitment between Stats SA, the CIPC, SARS, on the single business register project, which this time last year was looking like it would be done within a year and just simply hasn't been done. Now, I'm very aware personally of the issues in CIPC. I know Stats SA seem to be very frustrated. Since SARS is one part of that project, and the project seems to be at the very least delayed, what can you report on that business register process? Because it seems to me to be something that will enhance both the working of government and make it easier for businesses in this country, but yet we don't seem to be making any progress there. I've had concerns from certain constituents about tax clearance certificates, and I'd like the commissioner just to just to comment on an allegation that was made in general to me, that because of corruption within SARS, there's been a tightening of the processes around tax clearance certificates, and that's actually hurting many legitimate businesses. So I've heard from sectors of the economy that they don't feel like they're doing anything wrong, but because the compliance measures are being tightened because of SARS's internal issues, they're being squeezed. Chair, the commissioner said that, I just want to double check something. He said that in the recession, on page 4 of his notes, in 2008-09, while the economies of most of our trading partners showed contraction, the South African revenue collections grew by 9.1%. On slide number 7, I mean, that may be the case in 2008-09, but am I correct in saying that then in 2009-10, it contracted by 4? So we're on a bit of a lag, in other words. It's just a point, because I heard the commissioner, and I thought that's a very sunny assessment, and I thought it didn't reflect the reality, but actually we were just on a lag to the rest of our trading partners. Then, Chair, on the 255 billion lost due to the financial crisis, that's a really interesting statistic. And if we think of it, it's simply a loss associated with slower growth. I'm interested in the flip side of that argument. What would the tax benefit be if we grew faster? Has SARS done the calculations on that? If we lost 2.5 trillion, just over a quarter trillion rand because of slow growth, what would we gain if we grew faster in future? Then, Chair, on page 9, slide 9, I couldn't believe this Indian statistic that during in the aftermath of a recession, they grew their tax revenue massively by 60% over 5 years. And I thought, well, that must be in India, that must be due to the fact that maybe their tax base is growing enormously. And then it made me think about our performance, which you can see on slide 9. And it seems to be a little bit disconnected from the reality of our growth rates in South Africa. I think we were growing at around 3% in 2009, 10, and 11. Yet, if you look at the growth in tax revenue between 2009 and 11 on the graph, it goes up from to about it's about 130% of what it was roughly in 2009. Now, that would require growth rates significantly higher than what we were achieving, unless we were also growing the base. So, did we in the last 2 years manage to grow the base in a similar way that India did? Because that would be the only thing that could explain that quite extraordinary performance, because we certainly weren't achieving the growth rates required. Chair, on slide 12, it's fascinating the jump in the number of registered individuals. Can the commissioner tell us what the number of returns was in 2009? We could see the number of registrations is 10.3 million. How many of those submitted returns? On page 15, Chair, I understand the VAT vendors is decreasing because of a cleanup, as the commissioner says, but how much of it is decreasing because of a legitimate decline in legitimate business activity? Obviously, you're cleaning the database, there's going to be a decline, but I presume some of it's also businesses that are actually just closing. Can you give us an estimate of that effect? And then lastly, Chair, when we did the hearings on the budget, one of the presenters, I can't remember who, told us that in South Africa, 4.5% of taxpayers pay 38% of revenue. The equivalent stat on page on slide 21 is it shows that 8% of taxpayers pay 54% of revenue. That might mean that the stat we were told in the hearings is also correct. I just wanted to confirm it. If you take half of that 8% that SARS has identified, does it contribute around 38%? Does that number sound correct, given what you've told us? And then lastly, Chair, just a comment on that and the inherent fragility of our tax base. I think I made those comments, these comments yesterday when you weren't here, but the problem with having so much revenue dependent on so few taxpayers is that those taxpayers tend to be very sensitive to tax rates. They tend to be very internationally mobile. And obviously once you tax them above a certain threshold, whatever that is, you stand to lose their entire tax contribution if they leave. Does SARS have any analysis of the fragility of our tax system based on the very small number of taxpayers that contribute the majority of the revenue?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, mine is just one question. I'm interested in the collection of revenue from the plastic sales, from Pick and Pay, from Woolworths. That collection, how are we doing, and what is the monitoring? Thank you.
And that was the last question. You've got plenty of questions. But you've got a capable team with you. There's no free lunch.
Thank you, Chair. Definitely there's no free lunch. I think they have brought the doctors. They're going to answer the difficult questions. But let me deal with a few, and then my colleagues will take those that are there. One other question I've asked, what have we done to ease how have we made it easier for taxpayers who are compliant, you know, to continue to fulfill their obligations? I think one of the areas, honorable member, that I think we have done very well on is on the service side of improving our service. I mean, one of the statistics that you will see in the annual report and was included in the better value for all little report that the committee asked for in August last year demonstrate that in terms of turnaround times on assessment, you know, we've collapsed that turnaround from what it used to be. It used to take about 8 months for you to get feedback on your assessment after filing. If you are entitled to a tax refund, you know, it takes at least now 24 hours, which we think is a remarkable turnaround, particularly for those people that are complying, to know that the speed at which you're going to get a refund when you're entitled to encourages you next time to also file early, because you know that if you're entitled to some refund, you'll get it as early as possible. So that we have seen as one of the things that have encouraged people to come forward much more easier. But also what we have done is we have introduced a lot of enabling technologies to make it easy for people to refile. We've pre-populated almost 80% of simple returns. All that people have to do, if you have one source of income, you don't have many deductions, all you have to do is to come to our offices or on e-filing, sign your tax return, and in 24 hours it's done. So pre-population has gone a long way in making it easier for people to fulfill their obligations. Our call centers, at one point, Minister Manuel termed them dysfunctional. We have invested a lot in them. We field at least 6 million calls a year with a 95% first-time resolution rate. The first all calls, in most instances, have been answered in the first, 15 seconds of the call ringing. So we try and improve the service side as much as possible. But the point that I always make, Honorable Kouranoff, is that we have 12 million taxpayers on our register. Even if we are 99% effective, there's still 120,000 taxpayers that will be unhappy with our service. And as I illustrate, they fill the FNB stadium next to Soweto. So physically, it's a lot of people. So we will always experience a number of taxpayers that have had some frustration with our service, because our tax base is so big. But we try and do as much as possible when we come across those things. And then in the next tax filing season, we'll be introducing some other innovations, like, for example, core browsing, where when a taxpayer needs help, we will be able to, with your permission as a taxpayer, take over your computer and guide you through you filling all your returns. You phone the call center, we connect, and you give us permission to guide you through these things, and then we will populate your tax return by both sides having the same screen. We'll also be launching a downloading application where if you want to do your tax return, you can use, you know, smartphones and mobiles to be able to do those things. So we're trying everything to do this thing. So I'm trying to show you that, you know, to break a little bit on what we're trying to do to make it easier for people to comply. The honorable member asked about zero-rated goods, Chair, and what assistance are we giving the poor to reduce their tax obligation. Chair, the zero-rated list was a protracted, if you remember, outcome of a discussion that took place in NEDLAC. If we want to add, it's not even a national treasury policy, unilateral policy issue. It has to go back to NEDLAC. And that list, which includes bread, oil, fish, chicken, and many other things that are done, that are zero-rated and they don't attract any VAT, was a consensus thing by stakeholders at NEDLAC to say that is the kind of goods that represent, that are consumed, I mean, in most instances by the poor people in our society. So if we want to improve that, we have to go back to NEDLAC with propositions, and every community, what do they call them, every stakeholder in NEDLAC will have to go back and then open the debate through that particular process. I think we are one of very few countries in the world that has that facility, where the zero rating, you know, takes place through stakeholder engagement, and we encourage that, because then society cannot come back and say unilaterally either Treasury or SARS, you know, have decided to choose and pick and choose, you know, services and goods that are not necessarily representative of the poor. So the people that own that list, it's actually the NEDLAC people. CIT register from Honorable Mteto and possible, I couldn't remember, possible reasons for the increase. No? Was it a question? Oh, okay. The bright guys will answer that question. Right, Honorable Ross asked the question on the tax revenue loss because of offshore listing. Remember, the offshore listing was a protracted process that we went through, Honorable Ross, when a decision is made to allow these companies to list offshore. And one of the reasons, or a few of the reasons that were put forward was to make it easy for those companies, while we still had the exchange controls, for them to raise debt easily at a much cheaper rate, an affordable rate, so that they can then expand while they still hold their core tax base in South Africa based on our residency-based things and the tech, double taxation agreements that we have with other companies. And I think we have seen these companies that have gone, with some few exceptions, having grown quite exponentially, and the returns, some of them have been coming home because the shareholder base, some of it has remained South African. As the shareholder base and the dividends flow, you know, reflect that shareholder base, you know, we expect obviously that, you know, there will be that expatriation of profits. But of course, that's the reason why we have globalization and free, you know, free business in the world that people can do. But I think we have helped our companies to expand. We've seen some of them, like, for example, MTN, that still has a base here, and a lot of their corporate tax is paid in South Africa. And so, for example, South African breweries, the South African company contributes about 35% to their profits, and we tax them here. I don't think it's an accurate statement to say we have lost or we have expatriated a lot of our income. And then the cost of doing business in South Africa, we are only starting, Honorable Ross, on CIT modernization. We have seen a lot of the cost of compliance coming down after we completed the personal income tax modernization, the VAT modernization, and we hope to see the same kind of outcomes when we complete the CIT modernization. But we have also done a lot on the small business side. And you have seen when we launched our compliance program, which we gave you a copy of 2 weeks ago, and then also at the budget speech, the minister did announce that for small business, to make it easy for them to do business and to comply, we have reduced the number of returns from a monthly return to biannual return, so that we can reduce the amount of time that small business spent on compliance. We are now going to small businesses with them equipment that we demonstrated at the budget vote, to make it easy for them to be registered by us going to them rather than them, having to come to our offices. But also we have expanded our footprint. Nationally, we created last year more than 15 new offices. We have introduced, as I say, new other facilities that makes it easy for companies to be able to deal with us electronically and remotely without having to go through onerous processes of filling forms. And then that question, Chair, is related to what Honorable Harris asked in terms of, business registration process. And maybe I should take the opportunity now to also respond to that question by saying the business registration project has been going on now for over 8 years. I think if we are to be honest with each other, it does not make the kind of progress that we are wishing it was. I think the big issue is around the scoping. Because if you are going to have one business registration thing in South Africa, then you first have to have the enabling legislation. And also there are sections around the tax compliance and registration that are confidential. How are you going to go around making sure that you protect and you act according to the income tax law so that nobody can have access to taxpayers' confidential information? If the idea of the business registration was for you to register once and never have to register again, either for any other thing in GTI or CIPS or State South Africa or any of those things, to construct the information system in such a way that it fulfills all the obligations that are placed by all the legislations that each one of us is mandated to administer, it's not such an easy thing. We've got to agree on the technology platform, and we have not made many progress because there's been also lots of changes in Cipro, there's been lots of changes in other businesses that are supposed to get involved in this thing. I mean, State South Africa has a real technology challenge because their technology platform is also a bit old and needs some modernization. And we have been busy with our own modernization where we wanted to have a single registration within SARS. And we believed once we can sort out our single registration of tax or customs within SARS, then we will be ready to be able to talk to the rest of the other components. So it's not an issue of not being willing to participate and bring this project to fruition, but practically we've been all at very different starting points to enable a business, a global South African, sort of business registration platform. TCC and the allegations that there are corruptions around within SARS, we have revamped the TCC platform simply because it was easy to get a TCC. But most of the corruption actually in TCCs are people that tender for government business or any other business and they need a tax clearance certificate. And, you know, they keep on forming new entities every time when they enter, because the one that that tendered for a particular tender is not compliant, so they go and register or buy off the shelf a CC or a company, and then go and tender on the street. So we now had to instrument a new platform where we can be able to connect the individuals that are beneficiaries in each of the entities that are there. And for us to be able to do that, honorable members, we need then the master's office so that we know who are the directors of these things. And then the database has to be accurate enough for us to be able to issue a tax clearance certificate based on the fact that the directors are compliant. And then once you get there, you need then an enabling legislation to say, if you've got a right to say, direct, you can hold directors liable for tax clearance and tax compliance for an entity that they are just part owners of, not necessarily full owners of. So we had to square all those type of stuff. And until we have squared those contradictions, the loop will always remain that makes tax clearance certificates difficult to say they are foolproof. So there are challenges, we agree. And because of the lack of this system being foolproof, you know, the opportunities for people internally to sell this tax clearance certificate. One of the other issues, by the way, that is a problematic issue is to say, once you issue a tax clearance when a person applies for a tender, it doesn't guarantee that throughout the implementation of this tender, the person stays compliant. One of the issues that the multi-working group on procurement that the Minister of Finance set is to really see if they can come up with regulations in the PFMA that says that at any point during the implementation or the length of the tenure that you have to go through tax clearance loopholes, yes, exactly, so that you can be disqualified at the point where you are not compliant with tax laws in this country after acquiring a tender. So yes, there are. What the impact is, I don't have the numbers with me now of these things, but definitely we can acknowledge now that there are loopholes in the tax clearance certificate. India, see, I'm not sure what the Indian tax to GDP was, but I remember the last time it was in the higher teens. Ours is sitting at 24%. So the expansion of their tax base is because they are growing their tax to GDP ratio, which was very low. For a population of 1 billion people to be at around, I think it was around 11 or 12%. So what they have done is they've introduced tax products that extends that particular base, you know, so that you have a much higher tax to GDP ratio. So it's not because of the performance of the economy of India per se. It's just that there are lots of many other people that are supposed to pay tax, which were not paying tax. So they are now introducing those instruments so that they can be able to collect those things. And they are also going through modernization. So there have been a lot of tax collections that they have not been doing. So that expansion of 60% over 5 years is really a reflection of them recovering the taxes from the population base that they were supposed to do it right in the first place. And then the rest of the questions I think I must give to my thing, Venda?
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner. I would just like to make one or two general remarks before I go into the specifics. At the time when we developed the tax statistics, it was intended to put out the statistics for academics and policymakers to wade through it and develop their own storylines and decide what that tells us about the economy. So when we prepared for this particular presentation, the Commissioner challenged us to say that we need to provide a storyline to say that what does this tax statistics tell us? And we selected the storyline of the global economy. There are many other storylines that we could have selected, but we thought that to be the most compelling story to tell at this moment. And as we are gathering statistics around employment, we'll be able to start to make a meaningful contribution to the employment debate in the country, because now all employers are required to register everybody, irrespective of whether they pay tax or not. So there are many other storylines that we could have developed. One important thing, though, is, and the Commissioner has mentioned it, is that the tax statistics now offer us internally, both us and Treasury, the ability not to be remaining reactive, but to become proactive about Trump policies. And so if we see shifts in certain tax products, we can give early warning signals through to the Minister, like he's mentioned, the VAT story, where we were able to, well in advance, before the crisis hit us, that we could tell the Minister that we seem to have a problem, and he could warn the markets and prepare the markets that we are expecting a downturn of 75 billion that the Commissioner has referred to. The other important point to note is slide 7, is that you will see that if the GDP contracts of a country, the tax reacts much more volatile. The volatility, in other words, if the GDP declines, the tax declines further than the GDP. And if the GDP recovers, the tax revenue recover faster than stronger than the GDP. And that's quite important that you understand, first of all, that the total tax revenue react, I guess, but also understand how the different tax types react to changes in GDP. And so we are developing some mechanisms that will help us to signal to Treasury what the impact of particular policies would be on the economy. So this is meant to start to begin to understand the interplay between tax and the economy. So I'll stop there. I used to lecture, so I don't want to go into lecture mode. The question on which companies were affected the worst during the downturn, what we found is that the larger companies were relatively resilient and that they've actually retained quite significant cash reserves to weather the economic downturn. And they also introduced cost-cutting mechanisms. And some of those cost-cutting mechanisms resulted in their value chain being affected downstream. So the smaller companies that are the suppliers or that interact with these bigger companies, they would appear to have suffered quite badly. And they're still battling. And we could see that in the number of liquidations. The liquidations have gone up quite significantly during the recession, but it's starting to stabilize now. So we see some stabilizing. Unfortunately, I don't have the exact numbers, but I can provide it through to members. So the small and medium companies are the ones that were affected the most. On the issue, the Commissioner has referred to the benefit of globalization. But part of our compliance strategy, we also look, it's a question that Honorable Member Ross has raised, the cost of shifting head office overseas and all of that. There's also a downside to that, is that multinational companies especially in developing countries, a scourge of transfer pricing. And we have raised a big project in the LBC, and my colleague could perhaps add to what I'm saying. So transfer pricing is, in its developing countries, in Africa especially, so bad that it exceeds far the donor aid that gets directed to those companies. And we have some studies on that. We'd like to address the Honorable Member Harris's question. Yes, you are right. At the time when our trading partners contracted, we grew by 9%, and it was due to the lag effect that we then contracted about a year later. And the lag effect was introduced by the company, by CIT, because companies they report at the end of the activity. So if they experience a downturn now, we don't see it straight away. We see it when they report a year later. And CIT was responsible for most of that contraction. The Commissioner has dealt with India. Tax clearance certificates is dealt with. Okay, the growth in the individual, again, Honorable Harris's question, the growth in the register of individuals that's now over 12 million, closer to 13 million, what it meant is that employers are now required to register all employees, whether they are under the tax threshold of about 60,000 or whether they are not required to submit. So that's on page 27 will show you. So the number of assessed taxpayers would roughly remain in the 4.2 million range because they still have to submit. All that we've done is to add those people that were previously not required to submit. So we have now a complete register of the employment profile in South Africa. It's on page 27, yeah. The other question that Honorable Harris also raised is very interesting. And remember my earlier remark that the tax revenue reacts quite violently or quite volatile with elastically with the changes in GDP. What we've done is we've actually taken the actual GDP performance, even albeit being having been reduced because the GDP contracted also, and then we applied the 27 tax to GDP ratio percentage and the 24, and that difference gave us a 255. So the difference would have been bigger if we had assumed that growth had maintained its previous trajectory. But that calculation we can do, it's quite easy to do, and we put it in a spreadsheet and we can come up with that number. So what I'm trying to say is, once you've got these numbers, you can develop hypothetical cases and different scenarios quite easily, and that is the intention, that you've loaded this data into it and say, do the what-if type of analysis. So the current gap is based on a reduced growth in GDP. On slide 21, the 8%, I'll ask my colleague just to talk, Dion, or on page 21 on the plastic level, the Honorable Dlamini, the numbers are on page 21 of the tax statistics. Dion, if you want to handle that, then I just want to get back. Page 21. Yeah. Just page 13. Of the book, yeah. Okay. So I'll ask my colleague just to talk a bit while I just get my thoughts on the 8% question that Mr. Harris, Honourable Member Harris, has raised.
In terms of the collections, the collections have increased significantly. Also, if you have a look at the cost of the plastic bag levy, it is a fairly low level. I can't recall the exact number, but I think it's some. It's 258 million, but the levy on the bag itself is around 2 cents or 3 cents. But if you actually go to a shopping mall and you actually buy a bag, they sell you the bag for 35 cents. So whether we increase the levy with 1 or 2 or 3 cents, it's not really going to change the behavior of the taxpayer, because they are paying so much for the bag in any case.
Okay.
Only 3 cents of that comes to the fiscal. So the other 35, the other 32 cents will go to the manufacturer of the bag. So
okay, just to finalize on the last question that Honourable Member Harris has raised, he said in the budget we refer to South African 4.5% of taxpayers pay 38%. In this presentation, we say 8% is paid by people over 400,000. It is just a question of different cutting and slicing the different tax categories. I thought you said in the budget, it was said that...
It might have been in the budget, but I thought I remembered it from the public hearings. I just wanted to check if it was accurate, if you can confirm that.
Yeah, we can confirm that for you. We will do that. But it's just a question of how you slice. You could basically check a cut-off of 500,000 or whatever. The tax statistics allow you to. And moreover, the tax tables are available in Excel format. You can download it from our website. So you can play with the tables as much as you want to. So I think...
There were two questions that were not answered. One is if maybe Randall or one of your guys could answer it, is the decline in the VAT register, which Honorable Harris asked, that question, and then the fragility of the tax base, where you have a few taxpayers, and the fact that they might go overseas.
Okay, the decline in the VAT register. First of all, the commissioner did mention that we embarked on a major cleaning up exercise in about 2009, where the VAT register was cleaned out. And then there's also what we found, a lot of duplication in the register, where one company would have multiple registrations, and that also confused some of the registration. What we generally find is that when companies go out of business, that they retain the VAT registration number. So that is, we'll have to unpack that, and we'll have to do a deeper study on exactly what the impact was on the VAT population. But basically, it is the cleaning up and the depopulation, and then also big companies, especially when they have subsidiaries and different divisions, they have different types of VAT registers. And then one thing that also have sort of dampened the registration growth was we introduced much stricter registration requirements, where we require companies to almost go through a FICA type of compliance. Because remember, if you give somebody a VAT registration number, you almost give him a checkbook to start to write checks. So we've introduced much stricter registration requirements that we can make sure that we can get access to these people and track them. So the issue on the impact of the VAT vendors as a result of the recession, we'll do a deeper study on that and then come back to the members on that. The issue of the fragility of the tax base, because we have so few people paying so many the major part of the taxes, that is a question of demographics. What will happen if everybody leaves the country? Then we won't have an economy, I think. So it depends on it depends then on, so what I would do then for the members, we could do a sensitivity study on if certain categories of taxpayers leave the country.
Now, just to add here on the fragility of the taxpayers, the statistics that Honorable Harris mentioned of 8.8% to 54.7% of assessed tax, those are people that are registered taxpayers. One of the focus areas that we highlighted in our compliance program, if you remember, it's wealthy individuals and the abuse of trust by these wealthy individuals. If I had to make an example, Chair, there's one taxpayer, a wealthy individual, who had 11 trusts around him and applied for a tax clearance certificate to externalize 200 million rand to some other tax haven. And that person, in the last 5 years of his returns, he had only declared income of 211,000 rand, the highest. So those people that are wealthy and are supposed to contribute their fair share to the taxes are not doing so already. And most of them have externalized or are so up there and sophisticated. And we've quantified this thing, that their income is around 50 billion. So you can imagine the tax around that particular number of people. If I identified, I think, about 2,000 or so that we are going after to make sure that we bring them into the tax register and we make sure that they clear their fair share. I mean, there are 483 of them that have aircrafts and all sorts of other expensive toys, but their declaration are not consistent with the lifestyle that they lead. So those people that are already complaining about the fact that the tax burden is high are the people that actually have the most complicated and aggressive tax avoidance structures, and really aggressive tax avoidance structures around their own properties. I mean, if you really are a fair taxpayer like Warren Buffett, why do you have 22 structures around you? What are you trying to hide? Why are you having your cars, your children's houses and everything? In all sorts of interest-free beneficiary structures that are extremely just, created to avoid paying a fair tax. So it's the same as wealthy individuals really that threaten us that they can take their business overseas that are actually practicing this aggressive structure. So those are all the questions that you have answered, Chair. Thank you very much.
Dr. Luyanga, you're fine. You're covered. Okay, you're not very far from the ladies, anyway. Now, Honorable Tim Harris, it's not a follow-up, it's just a request through you that there was a commitment that perhaps the what-if scenarios on the growth could be calculated. If those could be sent to the committee, that would be very useful. Thank you.
Honorable members, I think we have interacted with the presentation in a more meaningful way. But I think there are two or three issues that we should take out of this presentation. One is what Honorable Goran Wolf raised, an acknowledgement of the work that SARS is doing. I think when we deliberate in extended public committees participation, we tend to focus on the strategies, corporate plans of National Treasury, where in revenue and all this is just a program in that. And we forget about the strategic plans that SARS would have actually presented to us. And we don't speak very much about that or to it. And one of the things that I've always raised in this meeting is that we should find a way that when we take presentations of National Treasury, we should do that on a separate day from SARS so that it gives us enough time to interact with this work. So we'll have to find a way. It's up to us as honorable members and committee members to reflect in our deliberations and discussions and debate the amount of work and appreciation that SARS is doing for the country. The second issue is on this issue of stats, the register between yourself and Statistics South Africa. I think, I don't know what else, who else is involved, but there may be a need to have a common platform where you sit and discuss this issue. Because as you say, you move from different platforms, from different angles. Let me just make a hypothetical example about what I think may be the challenges in terms of the authenticity of the number of companies that are registered and the effectiveness, and in terms of some of them being dormant and so on and so forth. I think there's a relationship, direct relationship between unemployment and the registration of these companies. I'll tell you why. If you go back since probably 2007 to date, young graduates, and it goes back to the issue of youth unemployment, more and more of young people are not job seekers anymore. They'll tell you I've registered a company. If you go to a funeral, you go anywhere, uncle, opa, I have a company, I have a CC. That's what you get. You know, it has been registered, I've got my company registration certificate. I'm looking for opportunities. In fact, they simply say I'm looking for a tender. And that's where the term of tenderpreneurship comes from. Now, I think it is precisely because young people are beginning to lose hope in terms of being employed. They want to become entrepreneurs on their own. Now, those are the companies that are registered and they are not actually active. When I clean the database, I'm sure I'm going to find hundreds of them, you know, connected to these individuals. In some instances, not young people, it's people who have lost jobs, registered companies, hoping to do something. Now, so I think SSA and yourselves, we'll have to find a way to deal with this thing and to continuously look into the cleaning of this database. But of course, CITRO also has got its own challenges, as you know. We hope, that's why I'm saying, I don't know who else, but trade and industry definitely is a player in this issue of registration. The last thing is, what do you mean by small business? What bracket are you talking about? Because I think if we were to actually look into, and I think DTI must also come to the party, economic development must come to the party, if we are looking for areas where we can stipulate job creation. You know, we speak about the turnover of 1 million. By the way, it's a salary of somebody. A turnover of 1 million, we call that business. This is the family unit. I think it should go beyond of what do you mean by small business. Are we talking a turnover of 30 million rand, and what are the incentive regimes that goes in there? How many people are employed? Because that's how we're going to stimulate growth and also employment in the country. So there's an incentive regime that should be targeted elsewhere. if you go to Japan, I'm going to the extreme, and they say we're going to show you a small, no, a macro enterprise, macro. It's the size of an SOE, your ISCO. In our case, that is a macro enterprise, not a small. So I think we should actually teach ourselves against the challenges that we have in terms of the incentive regime that we need to look into. The last one is the interest rate. The Reserve Bank reports to us. Its key mandate is around inflation and inflation targeting. 6.1%, 6.26%. Is it nominal or real? That inflation that you're talking about. Now, I asked employee in some small enterprise, say, between here and your home, how much do you spend per week after the petrol increases, your bus fare? Effectively, we're moving closer to a situation where people can actually become better by sitting at home and going to work because of the cost of transport. You know, it's scary. It's scary. And you have to say our inflation is between this and that. In reality, I think that inflation is very, very high. I don't have statistics. I'm not a statistician. But I'm just saying, from where I'm sitting, if you interact with ordinary workers and say, you earn 600 grand per week, between September and Amman's grant, if you want this person to come and work on Saturday, because their ticket, bus ticket, is a weekly ticket, it's Monday to Friday, they can't afford to come to work on Saturday, because that's a new expense, you know. So I think there's a whole range of issues that needs to be looked into, not necessarily by yourself alone, but a whole range of issues that needs to be looked into by a number of departments so that we can begin to address some of these challenges. This is just comments that I'm taking forward in terms of your presentation. But we really welcome, and I was looking at your speech that you delivered here, and I said I hope it has been circulated. Because if you read that, your presentation, what you took us through, it unpacks the economy in a very simple way, the challenges that we have, which bracket has been affected, and how do we think we're going to be able to address those issues from a tax point of view. But there are these other issues that I thought I should just raise there, Commissioner and your team. And honorable members, thank you very much. Honorable Sandrine, you had an announcement. What was your announcement?
Oh, thank you, Chair. And I'll request the ANC members to remain behind after this session.
Okay, thank you. Not ANC members from staff. You don't know that. Thank you very much.